Hello and welcome to the Middle East Podcast, Radio for Brother Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Middle East and Radio for Brother Liberty's media manager here in Washington, D.C. The chaotic scene of desperate Afghan military personnel crossing into Uzbekistan through the Hayraton Bridge on August 14 is obviously one of the spectacular images that come to mind when we think about the latest events in Afghanistan and the way in which the government fell to the Taliban. Other than that image, what happened later to those people and many more who have reportedly crossed or attempted to cross into Uzbekistan, the way in which those desperate escapes happened and what comes next for them all kind of remain murky. And that is in part Uzbek authorities have never been straightforward in terms of what is going on at the border and what they are doing about it. A few position statements that we have seen were somewhat unclear, sometimes contradictory. Recently, in the light of Tashkent threatening that 585 Afghan military personnel who have fled to Uzbekistan can't stay in the country, is raising alarm among some human rights organizations that their life could be in danger. So there is a lot to talk about on this topic as to what has been happening and what might be next, the way Uzbekistan is responding to this crisis, the way in which it did over the past few weeks. So there is a lot to talk, and to do so, I'm joined by Alisher Siddiq, the director of Radio for Brother Liberty's Uzbek service, locally known as Ozotlik. Alisher Ilhamov is trying to join us, who is the program officer at the Open Society Foundation. Shahida Toliganova, documentary filmmaker, researcher, is also originally from Uzbekistan. And Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio for Brother Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today in this important conversation. So we will start with Alisher Siddiq. I know, Alisher, you were absent for the past few days, but your team has been on the top of everything that has been taking place at the border with regards to Afghanistan in Uzbekistan, and your service is the source of at least most of what I just said. So let's start with you, Alisher Siddiq. The aim in this particular part is to do some reality check on the ground, and then we will get to the question of why Uzbekistan was reacting the way it did so far. So let's start with some reality checks. So anything to add in terms of those numbers that we were getting from Uzbekistan? And of course, the latest being 585 Afghan military personnel in the country. Do we know who they are? Are they only people, or there are more Afghans in the country as we speak?
Yeah, obviously there are more, but I wouldn't say terribly a lot. Yes, we know about pilots, military personnel, defectors per se.
Yeah.
And we know about Afghan citizens who crossed the border, including through the Amudarya River, and some other people who were brought on the airplanes. So the people who basically now in Uzbekistan, they're kind of considered as sort of a stranded category of people, those who have not get any permissions or who has no, let's say, documents, due documents, or in this case, military people, which is kind of a more politically difficult to handle. So that's about refugees. But in general, Uzbekistan made it very clear that there will not be any more people crossing Hayraton Bridge, and that Uzbekistan will help NATO countries to transfer through its airports in Navoi and in Tashkent to transfer some refugees. We don't know to how extent that continues nowadays, but that's basically it. So Uzbekistan will be serving as a transit point.
Okay, Alisher, the 585 people, this is the only number that Uzbekistan has acknowledged allowing to shelter in the country of people who...
No, I wouldn't go into concrete numbers, because it's not like a permanent kind of a refugee camp or, getting... Uzbekistan is not signatory of all these refugee conventions. So, it's not the first time such crisis occurs. And as you know, when there was a civil war in Tajikistan, people were living for many years without any status of refugee. So, and as far as I know, that UNHCR does not have office in Tashkent. And it's a politically delicate issue now for Uzbekistan. So they don't want to keep someone whom Taliban might want. So
but they have been keeping these people, at least, Alisher. We know that, like, when those people fled in the first place, Justice Ministry came out saying that, yes, they came with airplanes. And then that information or tweet or whatever form of message that was by the Justice Ministry, it was deleted. So Uzbekistan was kind of, I don't know how to explain the position that they are trying to take here. Again, we will talk about whys and ifs and all this stuff. But these 585 people that was openly now acknowledged, who are those people? Do we know in terms of like any high profile figure among them? Just kind of trying to understand when Uzbekistan say that they cannot stay here. I'm just trying to understand the sensitivities behind that. I mean, who are those people?
Yeah, I mean, again, that was a top secret, you know, including, of course, we knew about Abdulrashid Dostum. We know there were people in his kind of a circle, family members. So these kind of people we know about. But in general, from the videos we've seen, they're just officers of Afghan army, defectors, you know, and those who decided not to stay anymore. And really fleeing the death, maybe the obvious.
So this 585 people, they are separate from the caravan of military cars that crossed through Hayratan Bridge, I guess, that was on August 14.
I think they're including those people, yeah.
So Uzbekistan also reportedly said that they sent back 150 people back to Afghanistan, right?
Yeah, that's right. So again, they were not... The official statement, as far as I can recall, was those who were willing to return, you know, those who requested the return. That's like, we don't know to how extent we should believe this, but the wording of that statement was like that. So maybe, again, we're going to stuck in this, and I don't think we will find answers about the number of refugees now in Uzbekistan. We know that they are refugees, and we know they're of mixed backgrounds, you know, officers and civilians. We know that Uzbekistan will not keep anyone, as far as they say. They even don't want to keep military officers. For them, the option is to send them somewhere, including Afghanistan, you know, that we never know about.
Shahida, you are working on some cases. Perhaps it's not relevant to what we are talking about in terms of the, you know, numbers and figures that are coming out from Uzbekistan. So, of course, it is hard to discuss the challenge or the problem when Uzbekistan is not very straightforward about it. And, of course, we are going to talk about why Uzbekistan is responding the way it is. But what is your information? What number are we talking about here? Earlier, the Afghan embassy in Tashkent also came out saying there are 1,500 Afghans in Uzbekistan. I mean, what are your sources tell you in terms of the influx of Afghans to Uzbekistan?
Well, I am not really numbers and figures person, and to be perfectly honest, I didn't even look into it. My immediate concern for the last 2 weeks were the lives of the Afghan Uzbek journalists from the north, and I was trying to do everything possible to arrange their evacuation. From the people I know who I directly deal with, only one person managed to cross the border to Uzbekistan, not as a refugee. He had an Uzbek visa from before. So the situation is that if you have Uzbek visa, which was issued sometime, you know, before the current crisis, then you can cross the border, no problems. You can stay in Uzbekistan for the duration of the visa. However, you're going to be kicked out afterwards. As far as crossing the border illegally, none of the people I'm in touch with, I'm talking about 17 journalists, were able or attempted to do so, because the latest from the Hayratan side of the border is that everything works, but there's no point to go because you're not going to be let through neither by Taliban nor by the Uzbeks.
And are you in contact with the Uzbek authorities as part of your efforts to bring them to Uzbekistan?
I've tried to reach the foreign ministry with no avail. My friends and the similar volunteers like I am trying to approach the Uzbek embassies in Europe. Like one of the MEPs, member of European Parliament from, I think, France, was trying to talk to the Uzbek ambassador, and she got really annoying message saying that don't even try. We're under a lot of pressure. The situation is that we are not going to let the Afghans through the border unless they have proper transit visa, at least to the third country, or pre-authorization from the country of the ultimate resettlement.
Okay, thank you very much, Shahida. I guess Alisher Ilham is also on now, Alisher Ilhamov. So Alisher, in your absence, we have been trying to get to the bottom of how many Afghans might have fled to Uzbekistan and how many might still be there as we speak, so that we can understand the nature of the challenge or the nature of the problem. But Uzbekistan not being straightforward, it doesn't look like we can find out. So the thing is, we don't know how many Afghan refugees are in Uzbekistan as we speak. And we also don't know how many of them might have been sent back to the country where they fled in the first place. So any insight you might have in terms of numbers will be very, very useful, Alisher. Other than that, 585 Afghan military personnel and their family members whose presence in Uzbekistan the authorities have finally acknowledged and say that they must leave.
My impression is that those 585 people, military force, actually personnel who crossed the border on the aircraft. The government is claiming that actually they like forced them to land actually at the in Termez airport. My impression that was prearranged, because according to some reports, those people associated with mostly officers, military officers associated with Abdul Rashid Dostum, his military force he controls. Those 157 who crossed the border, actually the river, illegally without kind of permission from the government, probably most of them were returned back to Afghanistan. The figure quite similar to what was reported earlier. The reason why they allowed military personnel to cross the border on the aircraft, it's probably could be explained that by the background in the past cooperation between Uzbek authorities, the security service, and on the one hand, and the United States on the one hand, and the military Dostum in the past. So it was some kind of preliminary agreements to kind of provide protection. Otherwise, they totally rejecting any possibilities to accept any refugees from Afghanistan, even in having kind of a formal legal ground for that, reason for that, because Uzbekistan hasn't ratified the Convention on the Status of Refugees and the related protocol. So they don't have any kind of commitment to international law in this respect. Also, there is a kind of commitment to the overall kind of international law on human rights, which would also require to provide some kind of the compassion, protection, and assistance. But specifically speaking about the law on refugees, Uzbekistan has a kind of certain excuse not to accept them.
Maybe they have excuse, but you also cannot force them back to go in harm's way where you know that they are not safe, right? I mean, this is the concern we hear from human rights organization. I mean, we are going to talk about that a little bit later. I mean, earlier, 150 people were sent back. The statement reads like, with agreement to the Taliban, those people were sent back, that they will not be harmed. What kind of agreement are you really talking about to the Taliban? And also, there was another statement from the Uzbek authorities in which they said that there were lots of people at the border trying to cross into Uzbekistan, but they voluntarily went back. I have so many doubts about this, that the people will voluntarily go back to Afghanistan
environment. To pay attention also to one fact that Uzbekistan already years ago, in 2006, expelled UNHCR from Uzbekistan, their office. They cut any kind of relationship, so there is no any kind of presence of respective UN body would actually take care and try to coordinate those activities around related to refugees with Uzbek government on the highest government level. So now the Uzbekistan is indicating they're ready to accept the office to establish at the border close to the border with Afghanistan, but the UNHCR has to apply formally. It will take also certain period of time to consider and then approve their presence. But for the moment, UNHCR doesn't have any presence in Uzbekistan.
Okay, Bruce, please jump in here. I mean, of course, not only these the people that we are talking about here, also, at least speaking of those 585 people, Afghan military personnel that Uzbekistan acknowledges that they are there because Uzbekistan wants them to leave the country. There are also military aircrafts, right? Afghan military aircrafts.
Yeah, of course. What was it, like at least 21 planes, 6 helicopters? That's probably going to be a little bit easier to deal with. You know, obviously the Taliban would like to have them back.
And they are asking for it, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, clearly it's not in the interest of the Central Asian governments to give back operational warplanes and, you know, and helicopters to the Taliban. But I would imagine what they're going to do here is just they'll resort to like the UN or something and say, basically, this is the property of a government that no longer exists. It's outside the country, and see if they can't find someone that will take that. But, you know, the Taliban was not the government that military equipment was provided to. So there's got to be a legal loophole here where they can say, look, you know, the U.S., for instance, could say the stuff that you have there that was made in the U.S. was given to the Karzai government, the Ghani government. It was not given to the Taliban. If it's outside the country, you have no right to give it to a government that we didn't want it to go to or something. So that will probably be a lot easier to deal with than actual people. I'm sure Uzbekistan doesn't want that stuff to stay on its territory, but I'm also sure that they'll be able to find somebody in the West who will take it away to make sure that it never goes back to a Taliban-led government in Afghanistan.
That's very interesting. About the fate of those people, Bruce, why Uzbekistan wants them to go and Human Rights Watch is already concerned about their fate? I don't know whether there was a statement or by the Human Rights Watch or any other form of presser, but I saw our friend Hugh Williams' thoughts in a Voice America article in which he raised concerns about the possibility of those Afghan military personnel and their family members being sent back to Afghanistan. Is this concern grounded on something?
In this case, the Uzbek government, like probably any of the governments in Central Asia, what they want is they don't want to give them back, but they don't want them to stay. You know, it's kind of the same situation we've seen with the Uyghurs that come to Kazakhstan, where the Kazakh government doesn't want to give them back. And so they're hoping and they're looking for some government somewhere else to say they'll take them. That's where these people are in Uzbekistan right now. The military personnel is that Uzbekistan doesn't want to give them back. They certainly don't want to go back to Afghanistan because we can imagine what kind of a future is awaiting them there, especially since the Taliban really have it out for pilots because those were the ones that really, you know, killed a lot of Taliban fighters. I'm sure they're, you know, the Uzbek authorities are talking to all kinds of people around the world, but most likely in Europe and the United States about, will you please take some of these people? Just get them out of the country. So, you know, I don't think they'll be, I can't imagine they'd be sent back to Afghanistan. I'm sure that Uzbekistan doesn't want them to stay there either.
But 150 people Uzbekistan acknowledged sending back earlier, I guess.
Well, you know, those were citizens right by the border, and they were caught right there. You know, I mean, really almost all Tajikistan hasn't done it as much, but Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan have certainly had this policy where they just don't let them, they don't want to even let them in. Somehow, if they cross, then it's a bigger problem. But those people, I don't know, the Taliban clearly knew who they were and wanted them back into the country. And, you know, since I don't know what the ethnic makeup of those people were or who they were exactly, what they did as a profession, I couldn't say. But clearly, it was something that the Uzbek government didn't want to mess with at all and didn't see the reason why they had to let them in. I mean, you know, people have, you know, you mentioned the Afghan ambassador had said people have crossed the river. And I'm sure that's happened several times. We know that narcotic smugglers can make it across. We know all kinds of other people have made it across because some of them have been caught in Uzbekistan over the last 20, 25 years. You know, so it is possible to get across the border and blend in. And, you know, some people in northern Afghanistan have been doing business in Uzbekistan or with people in southern Uzbekistan. Some of the people in northern Afghanistan might have relatives in Uzbekistan. You know, so there's probably some people, maybe not a huge number, but some people who have gotten across and managed to hide or find shelter with local people already inside Uzbekistan. And, you know, I guess they're taken care of. But obviously, like I said, it's been impossible to close that border because they keep catching people, you know, every year, a couple people that make it in 5, 10, 20 kilometers inside Uzbekistan before they're caught. And people wouldn't be doing that if it was impossible to get across. So you have a figure for every one person caught, 5, 10 make it.
Thank you very much. Now, you know, this 585 people that the Uzbek government finally acknowledged, and we all kind of agree that there are more people than just this number. You know, this lack of transparency, I guess the word I'm looking for here. I mean, what this lack of transparency means here when we look into this from Tashkent's perspective, and also what Uzbekistan is really planning to do with these people. And equally consequential is why Uzbekistan has been responding the way it has so far on the developments in Afghanistan, and what might they do going forward. So let's continue the conversation talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate today on the Majlis podcast. I'm joined by Alisher Ilhamov, Program Officer at the Open Society Foundation, Alisher Sadiq, the Director of RFL's Uzbek Service, locally known as Ozotlik, Shahida Toliganova, documentary filmmaker and researcher, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Ready for Brady Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing Uzbekistan's response to the latest events in Afghanistan. So, I guess the border remains closed, right, Alisher Sadiq?
No, it is closed only for passing people. Like, it's no people from Uzbekistan crossing to Afghanistan or vice versa. It is open for cargo. It is open for tracks. And it's open for trains, you know, for trains transport, again, for cargo. And they were like, according to our information, there were 400 wagons of goods dedicated for Afghanistan were kind of stuck at the border. And since a couple of days, the transportation resumed. So two cargo trains, they crossed mainly foodstuff, flour, vegetable oil, and the sugar, this kind of stuff. Also, the corridor to Pakistan is also operational, and the trucks carrying, again, agricultural products also going through Afghanistan. So only drivers of these cargoes are allowed to cross the border.
So we are talking about here that trade continues between Uzbekistan and Afghanistan.
Trade continues, yeah, definitely. So that's the part of the agreement. So
agreement with the Taliban.
Of course, yeah. They started talking, as President recently revealed, that they started talking more than a year ago. And you remember all this, you know, high-level reception of Taliban leadership back then, and there were agreements on the future political relationship. So Uzbekistan is kind of demonstrating a goodwill that Taliban will be cooperative and they will continue the old ties, basically economic ties and basically transportation. And now recently Taliban leadership again congratulated Uzbekistan with the 30th anniversary of independence, and there the Taliban also outlines its priorities, saying that we believe you, we congratulate you, so we basically welcome your non-interference policy, and we are interested in your cooperation to construct railways and the continuation of the energy projects. So this is kind of ongoing. So from Uzbek side, yeah, this is a lot of a goodwill, and they don't want to deal with stuff like refugees and so on. I don't think this is even the matter they're discussing. Uzbekistan not only made it clear by its actions that it's not going to accept by words or statements, there is a law basically now adopted a couple of days ago. It's a secret government document that specifically bans any human crossing. So, and this is a secret document. Let me tell you the truth. I might have seen it.
They could adopt any document they would like to, but it's also interesting. Like, if I understand you correctly, Alisher, when there was an Afghan government, internationally recognized Afghan government, Uzbekistan signed trade agreement with the Taliban. Like you said, they signed during their visit to Tashkent. Is it what you are? We should understand it.
Yeah, there is an agreement that is not revealed to the public yet. So it's my personal belief, because the relationship is going like in a very secretive way. So there are people who talking, who negotiating with Taliban directly. So they know what they want, at least Uzbek side, and they want to have it. At the same time, it's very unpopular idea in Uzbekistan, you know, to deal with Taliban. It's very unpopular idea to accept refugees. For example, looking at Uzbek social media, you'll see a lot of negative comments and support of the government's, let's say, policy not to receive any refugees. Mm. I mean, there is a sort of a phobia, refugee phobia, you know, what will happen and stuff like that. Mm. And my main question, as you know, Uzbekistan was the main supplier of electricity to Kabul 24/7. Even when Uzbekistan itself was suffering of lack of electricity, the electricity dedicated to Afghanistan was always available. And to my knowledge, it was funded somehow by Americans. That's why it's highly interesting for Uzbek government. News were that there are like electricity outages now across Afghanistan, including Kabul. So I was wondering, maybe they stopped it. Mm. So obviously Taliban probably is talking to resume it, but do they have money to pay for it? Mm. Or they want to pay through other means, like by allowing cargoes to go through Afghanistan, you know? So they will have to decide about
it. The way Tashkent has been dealing with the Taliban in the past, and now the fact that they closed down border to any influx of people fleeing from Taliban, what kind of reaction is this creating among ethnic Afghan Uzbeks on the other side of the border?
Frankly, I'm not sure. You mean the reaction of ethnic Uzbeks in Afghanistan?
Yes.
You know, it's not like ethnic Uzbeks previously were very much welcomed and freely, you know, walking on Tashkent streets. It was very limited people who were allowed to enter, you know, those who have businesses or, you know, visas. Obtaining visas to visit Uzbekistan is a big deal. Before Taliban seized the power in Afghanistan, new government of Mirziyoyev wanted to change that, and they created this free economic zone right at the border. The huge sort of a logistics center, everything was set so that this thing changes and Afghans can come to Uzbekistan without visa and be in the city of Termez. So they were on the course to allow more cross-border trade and stuff like that. But that's everything just fell through. So that's why I don't think ethnic Uzbeks really tasted it, how it would be look like, you know, to be closer with the Uzbeks on the other side. I mean, it was always like that. It was always impossible to cross. And why would that all of a sudden be possible now? So that's kind of that's the issue. Mm. If you remember, there was a crisis in Kyrgyzstan. And yes, there were hundreds of ethnic Uzbeks were allowed to cross. And when there was a violence in Osh. At that moment, yes, you know, there were a lot of cross-border trade. They knew each other. They had family relationships, a lot of it. So for them, it was very obvious choice to come en masse and try to cross the border. And then they were allowed. But here is a little bit different story, I think.
You know, we know, like, in the past, like, when there was a fighting between the Taliban and various warlords in northern Afghanistan during the 90s, later 90s, we knew that there was some sort of connection between the Uzbek authorities and Dostum's forces or other warlords. I guess and all of that is now looks like a history here. Bruce, would you like to jump in here? I mean, I think the main question here is there is lots of unknowns, lack of transparency, the way Uzbekistan is reacting to the developments in Afghanistan. You know, I was stuck particularly about one thing, that this lack of clarity on numbers. And is it by design the way Uzbek authorities are responding into this? Or maybe they don't know what number they are talking about. We understand that there are 585 people that Uzbekistan wants them to go away, but this is the only number sort of we know. How we should understand this?
Well, you know, the Uzbek government has never been very forthcoming with clear and you know, precise figures on anything, certainly on anything that has to do with the controversy. So, you know, this is just, I suppose, business as usual was one way to put it. You know, they probably don't know how many, every person that's crossed from Afghanistan. I doubt they could possibly know that. Mm. They probably have a really good idea roughly how many, because they, of course, they've been watching the border. And as Ali Shear said, I mean, it's only 160 kilometers. It's the shortest border that Afghanistan has with any country at all. And Uzbekistan's been fortifying it since, you know, as long as they've had the money to fortify it, certainly really going at it for the last 20 years. So they probably have a really good idea about how many people are there. I doubt they could say all of them. But one, they don't want to let this information out because it's just trouble and trying to deal with the new authorities in Afghanistan. And two, you know, again, it's just the way they are. You know, I mean, every time there's been a problem with some controversy, some crisis, something like that, you never get straight figures out of the Uzbek government. But this is just the same thing.
But there are a number of other kind of relevant things that are happening here, like this 585 people. I mean, this is the number we learned from the Uzbek Justice Ministry. Otherwise, we wouldn't have known that. So we learned from the Uzbek Justice Ministry, and then they deleted that information on the internet. And again, yes, we understand that Uzbek authorities don't like to talk about numbers, but also we learned from Uzbek authorities that they have sent back 150 people based on agreement with the Taliban that they will not harm them.
And, you know, they almost had to admit to some of this stuff. I mean, look at how bad the Turkmen government looked when twice they didn't say anything about the Taliban delegations coming over, and the Taliban announced that they were meeting with Turkmen officials. One time they were in Ashgabat. So Uzbekistan sees that kind of stuff too and realizes you got 585 military people in Afghanistan. Maybe they've already been in touch with their relatives. I don't know, you know, somewhere outside in other places of the country. Mm-hmm. So it was already known to people outside Uzbekistan that they were there. Mm. You know, the Taliban might have known about these 155, 57 people that crossed over. So there was no point in trying to hide that from them. It's one of those givens where whatever numbers the Uzbek government's actually providing, you know, you instantly got to be a little bit doubtful about that, you know, that maybe that's not entirely right. Or right, you know, even close to being right. Mm.
Interesting. Alisher Ilhamov, I also wondered your thoughts about, I mean, the calculation that Uzbek authorities might have behind the way they are responding to Afghan situation. What comes to your mind?
I think we have here kind of different attitudes to different kind of groups of people escaping from Afghanistan, as already I think indicated earlier. Those who crossed the kind of river illegally on their own initiative, actually, were probably the kind of ordinary people. So the government decided to return them back to Afghanistan, just accepting these kind of formal assurances that to be not hurt by the government. With regard to this 575, and there was a report about another 400 who arrived by aircraft, it would be kind of difficult to imagine that it was not prearranged. And one of the reasons why they accepted them, actually, this 46 aircraft units, was that these people are associated with Abdul Rashid Dostum, kind of working under his control and his leadership. And Uzbekistan had in the past kind of long, as you know, the history of cooperation with Dostum by supplying the weaponry and the financial assistance to Dostum in the past. So if these people luckily captured and detained by the Taliban, they could just disclose that information. The people who knows too much from the point of view of Uzbek authorities. So they be kind of safe for Uzbekistan to Tashkent to keep them some way away from Afghanistan, just to keep their kind of their own credibility with regard to Taliban, because they wanted to kind of, for the moment, they very much determined to establish a close relationship with this new kind of government in Kabul. Mm-hmm. So that's why this kind of, we have here different interests. And also those people associated with the Dostum also would be have a kind of higher risk of to be persecuted, because, you know, if you remember years ago when the Dostum was fighting against Taliban and he managed to capture around 1,000 of Taliban, he persecuted them a very kind of brutal way. Mm. It was even considered as a possibly war crime against those prisoners. So the Taliban has, I think, has kind of good reasons to kind of somehow to retaliate for that kind of loss of their own kind of brothers, actually, in this kind of really brutal way. So this is a background of what is going on here.
Yeah, totally understand. So, you know, what Uzbekistan can do about these 585 people now? What are its options?
You know, on the one hand, they have interest to keep them in Uzbekistan, at the same time not to kind of to undermine the relationship with the government. That's why they kind of probably squeeze between two different kind of variants of action, you know, that they're hesitating what to do. That's what they're trying to do now, to make sure these people would be kind of evacuated somewhere else. That's why they indicated that if nobody will accept those people, those pilots, then the government will be forced to return them back to Afghanistan. And already today, by the way, a new decision was made that those foreigners who are staying for the moment in Uzbekistan and people without the passport, with a legal status, have to leave the country when the kind of expiration date is over, which is...
One question there. Expiration date of what is over? I mean, what kind of document are we talking about?
You know, this it could be visas or just permission to stay or registration for kind of some certain period of residence.
Uh-huh.
And this is the very time kind of coinciding with developments in Afghanistan suggests that they're probably trying to kind of push those people who managed to get into Uzbekistan and have some temporary permission to stay here. They have to leave Uzbekistan as soon as this registration period would end. That with me probably will be those targeting those people who arrived from Afghanistan, including those 585 military personnel and plus pilots.
Very interesting there. Very interesting. Alisher Sadiq, is there anything you would like to add in this? I mean, really, how Uzbekistan is going to come out of this situation now? Especially, let's talk about this 585 people there, the number that they acknowledged, how they are going to come out of this. I mean, it is certainly, it's my own observation here. I mean, if you send them back to Afghanistan, it's not going to look good when you look at this from international perspective. This is going to be questioned by international community, by Western allies that Uzbekistan is trying to build these days. If you don't, then perhaps it's something that Uzbekistan is worried that Taliban will be angry. I mean, how Uzbekistan is going to come out of this?
You know, according to my source, who is very close to the situation now in the border, I specifically asked this question and he said, forget about it, they will not be sent back to Afghanistan. It's out of consideration now. Especially these military people, no. Because there are two games at the same time, yeah? So there's a thing that we know that they declare, and there's, of course, a second plan, plan B, you know. Uzbekistan, according to the source, has been preparing itself and worked out on numerous kind of a scenarios of how situation would develop. At this point, there is a goodwill what Taliban offers, you know, including they accept their formal promises. There are a lot of agreements, for example, that I didn't know about. For example, I didn't know that Khairatun, the town of Khairatun, that Taliban is not allowed to enter there. So it's part of the agreement. So Khairatun would be sort of a neutral buffer zone where Taliban should not appear, because Uzbek said we need to secure the bridge and that's going to be under our control. So these kind of things. So how can they use these people, military people? It again depends on their expertise. Uzbekistan has a quite strong state security service. Some of them might even serve to security service. So we will not know many things. They might be disappearing like inside Uzbekistan and working on, if they're experts, I mean, they obviously will be used. Definitely the option to send them to Panjshir to fight against Taliban. Maybe that's also one of scenarios. Maybe they will make them some battalion of them and organize some kind of a border defense. So that's like, of course, it's a huge speculation. But more, let's say, realistic is just to send them somewhere, whoever accepts them, you know, a sub.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay. And also the military, the future of the military aircraft. And Taliban, I guess that's the news is on the Wall Street Journal story that Taliban are demanding those military aircrafts that were brought into Uzbekistan with those people to be sent back to Afghanistan, which means Taliban now. Is it a possibility from when you look into this from Tashkent's perspective?
You know, according to the military experts told us that according to international rules, any aircraft that illegally crossed your border is subjected to confiscation. So just the rules, yeah. So now it is confiscated. Now these aircrafts belong to some other government, let's say, yeah. So it doesn't belong to Taliban per se, no? I mean, it's my logic. And there's no like officially announced date yet or the government. So I think they will just keep it like very much according to protocols. Yeah. Okay. So they will bury Taliban inside in the protocols, I think. Yeah. So they will say, yes, sure, we can give, but who, when, you know, this protocol, you know, they will just be playing like the role of a civilized state versus amateur officials of Taliban. Yeah.
Interesting.
So they're not really kind of there yet.
Interesting. Also, everyone is waiting for what kind of government they are going to form. That's the point where international community will determine whether to recognize Taliban government as a legitimate government. That is, I don't know what.
Can I add to that? Mm-hmm. You know, Uzbekistan has no, I mean, they will, you know, keep burying things. They would say, we need to sign an agreement on this. We don't have an agreement with you on exchange. We don't have agreement with you about this. Let's do the agreement first. And then with who we're going to do the agreement? Do you have like the minister of that, the minister of this? So if you want to delay something or you're not sure about something, I think it's the easiest way to do is with Taliban. I mean, they can say we cannot do it. You know, we're very kind of this is the government. You know, it's not like a banana state. They will say, you know, we should go along, you know, this state agreements. And we don't have agreements with you, you know.
Interesting. Yeah, that was about the future of those military aircraft. Alisher Ilhamov, there has been many unknowns, lack of transparency, the way Uzbekistan was trying to deal with the latest events in Afghanistan. So I guess this is the concern by the Human Rights Watch, like the fate of those people, 585 people. So given the fact that Uzbekistan has not been straightforward, has not been transparent, how we can make sure that those people are not sent back to Afghanistan?
You know, if you're talking about those military personnel of 575...
That's the known number, yeah, so we don't know about the others.
Another reason, actually, by the way, for Uzbekistan to rid them off as soon as possible, and just I'm following up on what Alisher mentioned about Panjshir, that there is a risk they managed to get to Panjshir. And that would be the worst scenario for Uzbekistan, you know, because that would totally undermine the relationship with the new authorities in Afghanistan. If, for instance, they managed to get to Panjshir and join the Uzbek forces led by the son of Abdul Rashid Dostum, and if the Taliban actually discovered this fact, at least by capturing one of them, that the Uzbek government let them actually go there, that would totally undermine much worse than if, for instance, Uzbekistan doesn't return those aircraft back to Afghanistan. So that's why they have quite a good reason to rid them off, because if the longer staying in Uzbekistan, the more they kind of be likelihood and possibilities them to escape through the territory of Tajikistan and then go back to Panjshir. But in the same time, I doubt they will be kind of willing to do so. But this, I think it's one of the considerations by Uzbek authorities. Regarding this aircraft, I think the government of Uzbekistan and I find themselves on the cross of different contradictory interests and considerations. One, on the one hand, if they return this 46 aircraft units to Afghanistan, that would hugely reinforce the military capacity of Afghanistan. And that would increase the risk of military conflict with this country, because the more have capacity, military capacity, Afghan government will be kind of more tempted to, in some cases, to act aggressively against Uzbekistan. That would be against the interest of Uzbekistan to return this aircraft to Afghanistan.
Yeah, certainly at this stage, it's also hard to predict what kind of government are we going to see next door. Like the whole world, I'm sure Uzbekistan must be looking at what type of government the Taliban is going to form. That's obviously one of the areas to keep our eyes on, which will also determine the fate of many questions that we were talking about today. Also, like when the time comes, what Uzbekistan will do? Will it go and recognize the Taliban or not? I mean, what will determine Tashkent's decision on that? So that's another area to keep our eyes on. Also, the future of these Afghan military personnel that we were talking about today, as well as the future of the Afghan military hardware, which are in Uzbekistan. There are so many milestones on our way, which will, I guess, influence the next chapter of Tashkent-Kabul's relations. So just to conclude the conversation, and we are already way out of time, so where your eyes will be, Alisher, as a journalist, where things go from here between the Taliban and Tashkent?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, mainly, of course, Taliban's behavior. Mm-hmm. And they will have to live up to its promise not to become violent, yeah? Mm-hmm. So if they become violent, and that's going to turn into issue to deal with them. Mm-hmm. So again, Uzbekistan, I will just stress again, it is corrupt state indeed, but it is also has years of experience of dealing with that border with Afghanistan. The money issue is very important. Mm. So I would also look into like a drugs production, you know, these kind of things. I would look into, for me, the interesting is, you know, for example, there was a report last week, by the way, pitched by Shahida, about that Taliban destroyed Alisher Navoi's sort of a street art where his photo was yeah. where his picture was drawn. But there are also monuments of Navoi. There's monument of Babur. You know, there's a lot of people, ancestors that Uzbekistan's really respect and cherish, mausoleums of these people. Would they go to destroy it somehow? So that's gonna be like a big issue. Whether they will stop transit or whether drivers are attacked, you know, in Afghanistan, or whether they can control Afghanistan in general. So under certain kind of status quo.
There are some Uzbekistani fighters in northern Afghanistan, especially in Badakhshan. Will that be a factor in communications between Uzbekistan and Taliban?
Frankly, you know, it's just my gut feeling, but I'm not sure. I think they pretty much have their ears and eyes on both sides, Panjshir, and maybe they even consider helping at some point. So they have a lot of options, and these options will depend on the situation. And of course, if international community starts banning and really be kind of imposing sanctions, and if Taliban really turns into rogue state, you know, you cannot deal with, and then Uzbekistan will just shut the border, and that will be just going back to Karimov's era.
Okay. Okay, terrific. Thank you very much. We really need to wrap up the conversation. But last point from you, Alisher Ilhamov, I guess Bruce and Shahida left. So the next big thing that's coming up in Afghanistan is Alisher Ilhamov, the Taliban's government, whether to recognize the new government that they are reportedly forming as we speak or not. What are the factors that's going to determine Uzbekistan's decision whether to recognize or not?
As you know, the Taliban, at least part of the leadership, already promised to kind of to make this government inclusive. That's explaining why the kind of this not yet decided, finalized decision. Probably there is kind of internal discussions and disputes within this the movement. But what is clear for the moment is that in terms of governance structure, that Afghanistan will be moving away from federalist structure as it used to be under the previous government. You know, the previous regimes under Karzai and Ashraf Ghani were kind of based on this kind of recognition of certain autonomy of the regions and the ethnicities occupying those regions. And now this, it seems actually, it's, this idea of federalist, de facto federalist state is failing. Even kind of didn't working for preserving the previous regime, as you know, that in fact that actually they betrayed the central government. Mm-hmm. So the on if the Taliban draw lessons from this experience, they will probably not allow to going too far from their point of view towards kind of recognition of the rights of minorities, you know. But it doesn't mean that Uzbekistan has kind of just keep silence. My understanding and the belief that they should, on the one hand, they shouldn't kind of interfere by supporting military forces like, you know, those units led by the son of Dostum, but they should kind of use this available leverage, for instance, economic cooperation. The Taliban in Afghanistan as a whole, they're very much interested in the economic cooperation, in continuing this economic relationship. Mm. And so they're very much eager to get some kind of recognition, international legitimacy.
That's what I was thinking about. You cannot use
leverage to force along these diplomatic channels to encourage the government in Kabul to provide certain kind of respect to the rights of minorities and women. Mm. So it should kind of raise the plank of the in terms of priorities in the foreign policy toward Afghanistan, along with the economic and security related concerns. They should kind of raise the plank of the human rights related authorities.
Okay, I think we have to conclude it here. You know, there are many, many questions that we could be discussing today, but unfortunately we are way over time already. So with this, thank you very much, Alisher Ilham, Program Officer at the Open Society Foundation. Also big thanks to Alisher Sadiq, the Director of Radio Free Peda Liberties Uzbek Service, locally known as Ozotlik, Shahida Tuliganova, documentary filmmaker and researcher, and Bruce Panier, the Editor of Radio Free Peda Liberties Central Asia Blog, Kishlok Awazi. And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Peda Liberties Media Manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.